and then asking the pardon of young and lovely girls for the solemn talk of an old man, he launched into a foreign policy speech. One of the lines I liked best, and he interpolated it, I'm sure, was where he said very emotionally how happy it had made him when Lucy had decided to learn nursing and spend her life helping people. It was a strange speech, delivered on the floor of the cathedral, not in the pulpit. There was no introduction at all, and at the end, no clapping, of course. A robed official, a sort of an acolyte, I suppose, with a big mace, so little I know of church hierarchy and vestments, started to lead him back to join us. Glendon walked away from him. I had a dreadful moment when I thought he was probably going over and shake hands with all the assembled 60 girls. But what he did was go over and kiss Lucy. And she looked like all the angels had descended from heaven and formed a ring around her. Then he sat with us for the rest of the ceremony. Impressive, rolling, patriotic. So bound up was I in the pomp and circumstance, it was hard to realize that this was the end of 5 years at NCS for Lucy. The end and the best. Outside, Lyndon made surprisingly agreeable talk with Dean Sayer, extolling the virtues, most sincerely believed, the faculty at NCS, Miss Lee, Miss Fry, all of them, what they'd done for the girls, what they'd meant in their lives. Then we went to the green and congratulated graduates, standing in line a while with Miss Lee, hugged and kissed Helene. Her lovely mother and jovial father were beaming, too. Walter and Vanetta Washington were there. Their daughter had been one of the cum laudes, and so had Marlena Johnson, the only two Negroes, I believe, in the class. I saw some of Linda's old graduates, Jennifer Urquhart, Mariana Howard, and Jill McKelvey's father. She's still in Scotland, returning next month. Linda, in a navy dress with white polka dots and a bowler hat, looked very sophisticated, very sleek and grown. I was so proud of her. But today was Lucy's day. Her hair was a raven's wing, and her face was radiant. She'd sat up until 4 o'clock the night before, autographing miters, their yearbooks, and also a little steel engraving of the White House for each of her classmates. I stayed for lunch. Bishop Hines sat between Lucy and me. The Lindos were at the same table. And another little classmate I don't know who's off to Smith. One of the nicest things I heard all day was Miss Skeeter's. Thanks. We'll miss Lucy, and we'll miss these big boys, too, she said as she patted one of the Secret Service men on the arm. Youngsters had stormed me for autographs. I didn't mind a bit. The air was full of confusion and emotion, tears and laughter and beaming parents. Linda hadn't stayed for lunch. She'd gone to join Liz for lunch with Herman Wouk, author of Marjorie Morningstar, and a book about the Virgin Islands, Please Don't Stop the Carnival. Lunch was interspersed with school songs. Someone would give a signal, the girls would rise, and in clear, beautiful voices, sing songs about school days that were really quite superior. Voices and lyrics. I think some of them have a future in musical comedy. And then the rest of the day petered off into hurry and confusion and overtaxing of my strength. For the first time, I realized that I was very, very tired and cross with too many people. Mrs. Smith and Mrs. Brown had both come down from New York to spend the night, the afternoon, whatever it took, to wind up small things in the West Room and my office dressing room, and big things in the reception room, Lyndon's own office, and the cabinet room itself. I'd called Mr. Ketchum and Juanita to get some research and information on Lyndon's desk. It had been his as majority leader in P-38, made about the turn of the century by German craftsmen in the capital itself. We have years of work invested in it. I do not want to change it. And the chairs in his office, I found, were put there in the time of Theodore Roosevelt, when Roosevelt himself had that wing built. I do not want to change them. But the white goods in his office, God forbid, the three-faced television set, the huge ticker. They looked like the cold meat counter at the Safeway and the huge deep freeze of some very provident farmer. I yearned to get the ones Dr. Stanton has had designed by a furniture creator who who has researched in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. I'm going to love the reception room, the red rug, the red Fortuny wing chairs. They come in, welcome. Now we're going to do over the ancient black leather sofas. There's a red Chippendale design that is elegant and fitting. Dr. McClellan from the Smithsonian has provided a Whistler, a Glackens, a Sloan. We have Ruth Carter Johnson's Cowboy by Remington or Russell. They're inextricably linked in my mind. And Alice Brown obtained for us Aiding a Comrade by Remington or Russell. I would like so much, though, to get a portrait of Theodore Roosevelt, because he created this wing, thereby saving us who live in the White House from having all the business operation right on top of us. This whole project, the reception room, his office, the cabinet room, should take weeks and not harried minutes. I'm fighting for time, maybe a losing battle. It was a torn afternoon. Bess needed some time to talk about the arts festival coming up June the 14th that I look forward to with so much apprehension and uncertainty. Liz to talk about the Virgin Islands, brief me on all of it. Ashton to get me to sign mail and discuss many small problems and the disposition of rooms to the many, many house guests that are coming for the next 5 days while I will be gone. Ellen to talk about clothes to take on the trip. And finally, and more importantly, goodbyes to Linda. I found myself being very cross with her when she phoned in a casual voice just to chat. And with Lucy, who is still riding the peaks. Lucy had finished with her saddle shoes. She'd said she was going to burn them. I told her I was going to bronze them and save them as one would a baby shoe. All 4 years through NCS, and never, according to Lucy, untied since the first day she put them on. Stevie and Bill had been excitedly chattering with me about a surprise party they were going to put on for Lucy in the solarium, beginning at 9 o'clock. They had collected a list of her friends, something between 30 and 45. Dips and soft drinks and beer, and rather clumsy decorations done by themselves alone, and cute little cabaret tables with chairs and candles out under the stars off the solarium. But how to get Lucy up there? Lucy had decided that she was going to Camp David. In true fashion, she was being very late getting ready to go, very much at home with them. She had decided to go with her hair rolled up in curlers, simply because it just wouldn't dry in time. She had on shorts and a sloppy shirt. It was 9 o'clock. The guests were coming. Stevie was on pins and needles. Everybody was tiptoeing into the solarium, and Lucy was under the dryer in her room. I had sent Mrs. Smith and Mrs. Brown to their guest room after we'd had a couple of drinks together wearily, and a steak would follow them there. Lyndon was downstairs having a stag party for General Eisenhower, who had astonished us by opening the door, sticking in his head in the fish room. I'd introduced him to Mrs. Smith and Mrs. Brown. He looked wonderful, hale and hearty and happy, and it makes me look forward to retirement. I'm so glad that he and Lyndon can be friends. Lyndon, too, had looked as weary as I had felt, I with no reason, he with every reason, so many sleepless nights, and even 3 tonic days in Texas is not enough to rejuvenate completely. So Lyndon and the band and some 50-odd men were having a stag party downstairs, and Lucy was ushered by Stevie upstairs on some pretext to the solarium, where all of her friends jumped up shrieking their congratulations. It was gay and fun. Lynn and her mother and father were there. Ashton and her husband, they were going to be chaperones at Camp David. Willie Day, of course, bless her. A few friends from NCS, pretty little Sharon Chapman, Kathleen Carter, home from the university, friends from Lucy's days at the Capitol, along love affairs with the Pages in general. And then Stevie got up and delivered a small speech. Because of our great love for you and our interest in your future career, we have decided to buy you equipment to follow your profession. He produced a large and very complete nurse's kit. And then he said, Georgetown, in view of their appreciation that you are coming to learn nursing in the fall, I've sent you over a body to work on. In came a stretcher, carried by several of Lucy's huskier friends, a white sheet covering a body. The sheet was lifted back. There was Beth Jenkins. She raised up. Lucy shrieked. They hugged and kissed. The whole room exploded. It'll be one of the unforgettable moments in our White House life. This is a happy room, a happy night, but I'm too weary, so I left them for a massage and an early bed.